I am Plant Online. This is thecommentary.ca. Terry O'Reilly joins me now, the host of the award-winning CBC radio program, The Age of Persuasion, with Mike Tennant, has written an aptly titled book, The Age of Persuasion, How Marketing Ate Our Culture. Like the program, it is a highly engaging and endlessly fascinating book. It's very readable and witty, not to mention informative and, of course, entertaining. The book takes us into the world of advertising, how the ads we see here and to the market, or hopefully feel, are made. We also get a good history of ourselves through the ads that we've been exposed to. It's a great primer on how to be media savvy. Terry O'Reilly co-founded the audio production company Pirate and has had a long history in the advertising business. He has been inducted into the Marketing Hall of Legends. The radio program returns in January. Please welcome to the Plant Online program in Vancouver, Terry O'Reilly. Good morning, Mr. O'Reilly.
Hi, Joseph. How are you?
Very well. Yourself?
Very good, thanks. Good to be on your show.
Thanks for joining us. It seems to be that this book was a no-brainer, that you had to write this, or perhaps a lot of people wanted you to write a book, especially people who are fans of the program.
Well, you know what? We got a great call from one of the senior editors at Random House, and she was a fan of the show and said, how long is each of your episodes? And we said, well, they're 27 minutes. And she said, you must leave a lot of interesting material on the floor. And we said, you better believe it. And she said, well, with a book, it's your chance to pearl dive. You can really spend a lot of time exploring issues or, you know, anything you want to go after. And we said we would love to do that.
And Mike, he's a part of the program?
Mike is the heart and soul of the program, by the way. He's the producer. He and I write it together. He's the researcher. Mike is a huge part of the radio show and a huge part of the book.
Yeah. Now, does it surprise you how popular the programs have been over the years?
You know what, Joseph, it is maybe one of the biggest surprises of all for me, because I really, first of all, didn't think CBC would be interested in a show on advertising. So that was a shock when they said, we'll take it.
Yeah.
And then Mike and I were really prepared to get a lot of blowback from CBC listeners because we didn't know how they'd feel about a show about advertising on the advertising-free CBC and have a show hosted by an ad man. And the opposite happened. It was overwhelmingly kind and curious, and they really wanted to know more about the inside of the advertising world. So it has been this incredible ride for Mike and I. We just can't believe the response.
Now let's start at the very beginning. In the book, you tell a story about John E. Kennedy.
Yes.
And who's he?
Well, he's a forgotten footnote in advertising, but a very important one, because he was the guy in the 1920s that changed advertising forever, because he was the man who brought charm and kind, not really much, not wit, but he brought a humanity to advertising, and he was the guy that said, you shouldn't sell the product, you should sell the benefit. That was an epiphany to advertising agencies everywhere. And here's the other thing. John E. Kennedy was a Canadian. He was an ex-Mountie. So he changed Madison Avenue's take on advertising for all time when he said advertising is salesmanship in print.
What's the difference between marketing and advertising?
Advertising is a subset of marketing. So marketing has many different areas. So advertising is one. The logo would be another. Your sales force would be another part of marketing. You might do sales events. You might put out various products. All of that comes under the umbrella of marketing. And advertising, as I said, is only one aspect of it.
You know, last night, it was sitting in my office here at home, and around midnight, there was a documentary on David Ogilvy.
You know what, Joseph? I've been trying to find that for so long now.
Yeah?
I've never seen it.
It's a hell of a good show. It really is. And I guess it's British made.
Yeah.
And I, of course, read about him in the book. Would you tell us who he was?
David Ogilvy was one of the legends of Madison Avenue. He started an agency that is still in existence today called Ogilvy & Mather. They do the Dove advertising, among many other big brands around the world. He was one of the first ad men to really bring storytelling to advertising. He had incredible elegance in his writing and in his advertising. He's probably most famous for his Rolls-Royce print ad. And, Joseph, you probably know the one I'm referring to,
yeah.
Which the headline said, the loudest sound at 60 miles per hour, the loudest sound in this Rolls-Royce is the ticking of the electric clock.
Yeah, yeah.
When he wrote that, I mean, no one had ever told told elegant stories like that in advertising before. Ogilvy's also the most articulate ad man I think Madison Avenue has ever seen, because he wrote at least three or four books on the business that are still revered, that I love. And he had a lot of great rules for advertising that we all live by to this day. So he was a seminal figure in our business.
And he's just a stylish guy. I mean, he was a character, right?
He was a character. He's a British guy that came over from England. Here's the amazing thing. He started his agency at 39 years of age or something. I mean, most people are deep into their careers by then, and he switched to advertising at 39 years old. So he made such an incredible mark with very little time.
Yeah.
Astounding.
Yeah. Now, you're in the advertising business, right?
Right.
Yeah. Do you voice ads, or do you write copy? What's the...
I am a copywriter, and I also direct commercials. So what I do for a living, my 9-to-5, that's a short day, by the way,
yeah,
my 9-to-5 day is directing radio commercials and directing the sound and music and voiceovers for television commercials. And my company also has a creative department, so we write commercials from the ground up as well.
Now, having been in the business and knowing about it, there's a view out there by a lot of people that advertising is bad, that it's some sort of conspiracy, that it manipulates us in all sorts of ways. Is that the case you've seen from your experience?
You know what, I can't defend everything advertising does, but I think that I'm an advocate of the best advertising, which is highly creative, really rewarding, you know, work that is meaningful, that really is honest about a product. So I think advertising is necessary. I think good advertising is great. I think advertising makes the economy go round. It makes, you know, it sells products, therefore people stay employed, etc. So I think there's a real important place for advertising, and I'm a big fan of it.
This economic climate, how's that affected your business?
It's been terrible.
Yeah.
I think advertising is the canary in the coal mine in a recession. Advertising budgets are the first things to get either whittled away, reduced, or eliminated. So it's been very tough in our business for the last 18 months, and we're still not out of it yet. When we start to get busy, that'll be a real sign, a genuine sign that we're crawling out of this recession.
What are some of the ads that we've seen that you've done?
Well, my company works on just about everything you can name. So we work on Molson and Labatt. We work on Petro-Canada, so if you're hearing Petro-Canada ads, we've probably worked on them. Just about anything you can imagine, we work on. I personally direct about 500 commercials a year, so you can imagine how many products. We just did GM work with Bobby Orr recently. So we do a lot of different brands and categories.
Yeah. Now, in the book, you talk about the great unwritten contract. Can you take us through that? What are some of the clauses?
Well, Mike and I feel that's a very important contract, and the basic definition of that contract is as follows. Advertising should always give something back to the general public. So when you hear ads on a radio station, that is underwriting all the great music you enjoy. If you see ads on television, they are underwriting all the great programming and television shows you like to watch. Advertising should in some way give something back. So, telemarketing doesn't give you anything back. That's one facet of marketing that Mike and I feel breaks the contract. All it does is interrupt you and, you know, interrupt your dinner and want to take something from you and not give you anything back. So we feel, Mike and I, that when advertisers stop honoring the contract, that's when people start, that it ratchets up the annoyance with advertising. People get more and more annoyed with advertising every time an advertiser breaks that contract. It's absolutely essential to not break that contract.
And then they become suspicious about advertising as well.
Yeah, they just don't trust it anymore if they sense they're not getting anything.
Now, did you think that it has a higher purpose in advertising? That I mean, I'm thinking of those ads from Benetton a few years ago that commented on social issues. Should advertising do things like that?
You know what? I was amazed by that campaign, that Benetton campaign, because it went places that I've never seen an ad campaign go before. I mean, it showed people dying of AIDS. It showed all sorts of incredible images. I don't know. in some ways, I think most advertisers couldn't do that and maybe shouldn't, that it's an area. Once you're talking about commerce and business and getting and trying to get people to buy products, I'm not sure showing somebody dying of AIDS is the right thing to do. I just can't imagine ever suggesting that to a client. So I would say, as a rule, advertising should stay away from that.
You work in radio as well. As a medium, it's still relevant, right?
I think so. I think radio is the great survivor. It's probably one of the most personal mediums that there's ever been. It's not like television. It's really a one-on-one listening occasion, whereas television you'll watch in groups or in families, but radio you kind of do on your own. So I think that's why it's always survived.
And advertising there, I mean, you go in the book to all the great radio programs of the past, like Jack Benny and the sort,
yep.
and how advertising was sort of part of the program almost and made it almost entertaining.
That's right.
That's right.
When you see product placement in TV shows and movies right now, that's really nothing new because they've been doing that since the early days of radio, as you suggest. Jack Benny had Lucky Strike cigarettes as one of his sponsors, and it wasn't just advertising. It was incorporated into the scripts of the show and done so in very amusing ways. So advertising and products and programming have always been bedfellows going way, way back.
There's a radio station in Vancouver that plays old-time radio, and I'll always remember for the rest of my life, Lux Radio. The Lux Radio Theater with Cecil B. DeMille and Lux Soap, you know?
Yeah, just such great radio. I mean, just really, they really pioneered the use of sound effects and great writing and characterizations. I mean, I love all that stuff to this day. I think any young writer breaking into the advertising business should go back and really find those shows and listen to them because they're remarkable still to this day.
Can you talk to me about language and sort of the effect that advertising has had on our language? I mean, lines like "Where's the beef?" have become sort of, you know, have become the vernacular now, right?
Yes, no, that's right. And that's every advertiser's dream, by the way, Joseph, is that some line from your campaign gets picked up by the general public or becomes part of the culture. "Where's the beef?" was a classic one. That was for Wendy's, of course, in the early 80s when there was a presidential election going on. And I don't know if it was Mondale, I can't remember now, who challenged his competitor and suggested that his platform lacked substance and yelled out, "Where's the beef?" And the Wendy's commercial just skyrocketed as a result of that. And there's been a lot of slogans, etc., over time that that's happened to, like in the 60s, "When you've got it, flaunt it." Was such a great slogan that everybody was using, and it came from an airline. I think Braniff Airlines used to use that. So there's a lot of examples of ad slogans and lines. You know, "I've fallen and I can't get up." You know, one of those lines
from
one of the cheesiest commercials of all time, but it just takes off sometimes.
Yeah. Now, at some point, I mean, like lines, like Wendy stopped using "Where's the beef?" Where's that line where it's reached a point of familiarity, but sometimes it becomes saturation?
Yeah, it was interesting that Wendy's didn't choose to do. I think they used more Claire Peller. She was the name of the actress that yelled out that line. I think they did more spots with her, but I don't know if they kept going with the "Where's the beef" in subsequent ads. You know what I think? I think that's a judgment call. I think I always feel that many really great ads get pulled off the air too quickly, that they're still very powerful and probably could have existed for a longer period of time. And then you see ads that you wish you could just yank off the air because they're just so annoying, but they seem to also stay on for a long time. So I think it's a judgment call as to when an ad has run its course. It's not a science. It's purely an art, and that's why it relies on gut instinct so much.
What do you make of infomercials?
Well, they're definitely, the great thing about, one of the most powerful ways you can sell something is to demonstrate it. If you can just show how something works. I mean, if you've ever walked into a home convention, whether you're at the convention center, at an arena or whatever, and they're showing all the latest products for the home, if you see somebody demonstrating something, you almost want to run up with your money and buy it. It's just so convincing. So infomercials are really an extension of that, of the old pitchman of the 40s and 50s. So I think they work. It's not my cup of tea as far as advertising goes, but it definitely is successful.
Now, the goal of the advertiser is to get the consumer to buy stuff. You mentioned earlier that it's a dream of a copywriter that one of their lines, enters the language almost.
Yeah.
Is it also important to sell the experience of the product? I mean, the experience of being a consumer? I mean, we're seeing that more and more, aren't we?
Yes, I think it is. I think it is important because, I mean, one of the most important things an advertiser can say to his or her target market is that you kind of understand their life. I always say to clients, you know, the most compelling thing you can say is not that you have a product to sell, it's that you understand your customers' lives. That's really, because you'll get someone to, you know, once you show that, people will respond to you. They say, okay, they get me. They understand how this product fits into my life. It's not the most important thing in my world, but it's a small part of my world, and I love that they frame it that way. So I think that's extremely important if you want to make meaningful contact with somebody.
Do you watch Mad Men?
Love that show.
Do you? Yeah. The subtitle of the book is that marketing ate our culture. It's hard to think how it did so or to quantify that because it just seems it's like it's been around forever and it's been like this forever. If advertising ended today, would our culture be different?
This is a good question. Well, it would be quieter. There would probably be a little less consumerism going on, which is, you know, you can't deny that. I think, though, there would be something missing too at the same time. I mean, you wouldn't really be really aware of all the choices you have, possibly. And again, if advertising is honoring the contract, then maybe if there was no advertising, there suddenly wouldn't be as much great programming on the air. You know, radio stations, that's the only way they survive. And television, great shows like The Sopranos or Dexter or Mad Men all survive on the advertising revenue they generate. So it would be a very, very different world creatively, there's no doubt about it.
What has the Internet done for the world of advertising?
I don't think advertising has figured it out yet. I don't think advertising really knows how to harness the Internet. They know there's a big audience there. They don't know how to work with Facebook. They don't know how to work with Twitter yet. The social part of social media is the problem. It's social. It's a social place, not a marketplace yet. But the biggest change that I've seen over the last couple of years is the amount of feedback you get from customers now. Like in the old days, we'd get a couple of letters and maybe a phone call of either someone saying, we like your ad or we hate your ad. Now you get a tsunami of feedback from viewers and listeners. And if it's bad, it hangs around forever because nothing ever goes away on the Internet. It just hangs there. So it's going to make and has made for more scrutiny on advertisers.
Terry, it's been such a pleasure to talk to you. I've long been a fan.
Well, thanks, Joseph. Hey. Those are really great questions. Really enjoyed it.
You're very welcome. It's just such a great book. Congratulations and continued good luck with it.
Thank you very much.
The program returns in January. Until then, do what I'm doing, catching up by listening to some of the old shows by downloading the podcast at the CBC website. The book is called The Age of Persuasion, How Marketing Ate Our Culture. It's published by Knopf, co-written with Mike Tennant. Terry O'Reilly on the line. In Vancouver, I'm Joseph Planta.